5 seconds early today to balance the scales and give you guys what you pay for, which, of course, unless you buy extra stuff, you don't pay me nothing. So, hey, you get what you get. Anyway, I got a great show for you guys today. My buddy Billy Bond is going to be with us in just a minute, and we are going to be talking about food, health, and freedom in episode 3,889. Sorry, Billy, you just missed that 90, that round number. That'll be tomorrow's show. This will be a great show. I always love having Billy on. We were just riffing for a while before I went live with you guys. We always have a lot to talk about. But today we're going to get into some deep stuff. And it actually overlays with yesterday's show really well. Yesterday's show, we talked about the $40 trillion debt bomb and the three triggers behind it. And as I was going through the things that you can actually do about it, because you ain't fixing it, right? You can write all the letters to your congressman you want. You could elect 535 Ron Pauls into Congress. That ship has sailed. There is no fixing the economic system. So you have to focus internally. And one of the key points that I brought up into what you can do in your own life to deal with what's coming is your own personal health. And I said a couple of things. I said one was that the average person spends more money on healthcare than just about anything other than their mortgage and maybe their car payment. And many people spend more than either, depending on how unhealthy they are. Even if they have good insurance, the total cost of bad health, losing feet, having your kidney blow from type 2 diabetes, all these lifestyle illnesses, all the shit they advertise on television, you know what it's for? Lifestyle illnesses, chronic conditions, they cure nothing. But I also said the country spends more money on this than just about anything else. If you look at all the job growth in the past 20 years, it's in two sectors, government and healthcare. Yeah, that's not going to really fix the problem. We have to do it for ourselves. Well, boy, Billy's going to be coming on in a minute and talking to us about that. But, hey, you guys also need to make sure that you're taking good care of your money. And to do that, you might want to listen to my buddy John Pugliano, who's been working with me since 2010. He's a great investment manager. He's also a self-made millionaire. He did that before he took a dime of client money. And he has a great podcast called The Wealth Studying Podcast, where you can learn to grow your wealth like you grow a garden. And John knows how to do that. He also is a prepper. He's one of us, guys. One of us, really. He's a prepper reloader. He's got the gardens. He's got the food stored up. He's got it all. And he's a great dude. Again, been working with him since 2010. That's 16 freaking years. Met him at a prepper convention in Salt Lake City all the way back in 2010. Expert panel member, awesome podcast. Listen to it. Tune in about once a week is usually when he drops his episodes. They're 10 to 15 minutes long. And basically he says, this is what I'm doing, my money and my client's money, and here's why. And that way you can emulate what he's doing. Check him out today at thewealthstudyingpodcast.com. Next up today, Above Phone. We have been working with Above Phone, I guess, since right about the time that COVID peaked its head out and started about that long. Here's an ironic idea. How about you own your own tech, right? If you have something like an Above book, which I know I'm not on it today, but that's because of the way I had to set up. But I got my Above book right here. If you have something like that, you actually own your device. You own your tech. They also have great tablets, and they have great phones as well. It's right in the name, Above Phone. If you're like, I'm not sure I can use this new tech, they give you an onboarding specialist, 45 free minutes for every device you buy to help onboard you to it. Hey, and your Above book, if you get one of these, you don't even need them. There's a whole series of videos preloaded on it to tell you how to do everything. Check them out today at AboveFone.com. And if you're an MSP member, don't forget, $75 off any phone at AboveFone.com. And with that, well, wait, one more thing. Billy was like, I'm coming. Nope, you got to wait. I got one more thing. I promised I would do this for Nicole Sauce. Nicole has a soil microscopy intensive coming up October 2nd and 3rd at the Holler in Tennessee. Run with Alan Booker. You want to know more about that, jump over to thesurvivalpodcast.com. And when you do that, you'll be able to learn more about that and go to that course. Now, let's bring the man himself, the permaculture pimp, Billy Bond, onto the Survival Podcast. How you doing, bro?
Hey, man. Great to be here with the best podcaster in the world. I tell everybody about it, and I kind of use you for show prep sometimes. So, it's cool to be here with you. But I got to ask, what is that a Trombaccino in the background, or is that like some kind of cane?
No, it's a Trombaccino, man. I got to get my weightlifting glove out for it.
Oh my goodness, man! You look like Bam Bam on the Flintstones with that thing.
If you're not on the video, you're missing something really interesting right now. You'll have to tune in and get to timestamp 502 to find it. The hard thing about him getting them that big is to get them to that big and straight like that. You gotta hang them. You gotta hang them, man. So hey, I was on your show not so long ago. It's been a while since you've been here. Why don't you tell people who you are, man, for those that maybe are tuning in for the first time of a show that you're on, maybe have not heard of a Billy Bond. They don't know who or what a Billy Bond is. So tell us about the Pimp Cast and, you know, how you basically came into this life of, like, pushing liberty and permaculture together.
Yeah, man, you were a big inspiration for a lot of it, too, and early on. I mean, I was one of your first subscribers back in, I want to say it was 08 that I started tuning into your podcast. And it was about 08 or 09 that we had this massive crash. And the only job I could find on this earth was in third world countries. And, you know, I'm a journeyman electrician, been one for a long, long time. I wear a lot of other hats. I'm a butcher. I'm all kinds of things. Farmer, permaculture designer. And I'll tell you what, man, I was already 1 foot in the preparedness space. But I prayed. I was like, man, if I ever get to the other side of this, I promise you, I'm never going to be wondering how I'm going to pay the mortgage, how I'm going to do this, how I'm going to feed my family, all those things. And later on, you know, wondering what I'm going to do about my health. And it was all these things where I thought I had, you know, I thought it was perfectly, you know, years later, I thought I was perfectly decentralized in farming. And I was, and I am. If there's someone that runs a more decentralized operation than I do, I'm sure there's somebody. I just don't know who they are. And I don't know who that is, but where I was missing the boat completely was on my own health. And it was, you gave me some big clues. Well, the first time I met you over it, it was John. John Willis. Yeah, John Willis's place. That was the first time I met you. And then you introduced me to this carnivore diet. And or an adaptation of it. And because I told you, I think we had talked and I said, man, I was having some problems with it. And then I adapted it a little bit. And then bam, you know, I went from essentially from beginning to end, I went from 245 and I'm currently walking around right now at about 170. And even that might be a little bit too low for me. If I have a little bit of muscle on me, maybe I'm a little bit better. But hey, man, I'm going on 55. So what do you do? But anyway, all these other areas where it was the money, I was late coming to that one, but I had the farm thing squared away and I thought I was good to go. And then sooner or later, you know, age knows every man's number. And so I found myself in the position of where, man, you're dealing with high blood pressure, got an autoimmune disease, got this, got that. And then I've been on an all 100% kick to find out solutions to this stuff. And so I know you're in pretty much the same place as well, but yeah, that's, I wear a lot of things, do a lot of different things, but that's essentially what brought me here today.
Cool. And let's talk a little bit about health falls into personal sovereignty. I mean, you know, there is the old saying, you know, at least you have your health, and it's rooted in some real truth. It usually is when somebody's life is completely upended that somebody says that though. But the reason it's rooted in truth is I think all you have to do is think, and almost everybody out there will be able to resonate with this in some way. That's why I bring it up, because not everybody's had a chronic disease or something, but probably all of us have had some injury at some point that was actually debilitating, at least for a day or three. Like you roll an ankle to a point where you cannot put any weight on it. A knee, trust me, is worse than that. Or you wrench your back. And even if you recover, you go through a few days of that. And to understand the relationship of sovereignty, to me, all you have to do is like, think about that one experience and imagine it lasted 10 years. And then you're like, oh, I see, right? I mean, because if you don't have the ability to do the things you want to do and live the way you want to live, you could have all the quote unquote freedom under government you want or whatever, but you really can't exercise. Because I guess here's the way I put it years and years ago. You can't define freedom for another person, only for yourself, because what we each do with our freedom is different. And if you're incapacitated in someone, you can't do it. It doesn't matter that you're allowed to or permitted to or have the opportunity to. You still can't do it.
Well, if you're even if you're a couch potato and that's all you do, you still want some level of, you know, freedom. And that all begins with being able to put one foot in front of the other, at least to some capacity. And also, like when I was dealing with high blood pressure, you know, I found out later on that I didn't have a lisinopril problem. I had a lack of salt problem, which is the polar opposite of what everybody teaches you out there. You know, all these other things, and some of which I'm still working through right now. You know, it was finding out that everything that we're officially told seems to be a manufactured lie when it comes in the healthcare space, at least as it's officially told to the masses. For example, stay out of the sun. It's not good for you. Oh, no, we can't have any of that. And then I come across the work of people like Dr. Jack Cruz and find out, oh, my goodness, if that's wrong, if you get that one thing wrong, especially morning sun, then it's nearly impossible for your repair mechanisms in your body to do anything else. Same thing with our diet. You know, we're given this food pyramid. And like I said a moment ago, you were helping me realize that that thing really needs to be flipped on its head. And once I started doing that, I'm like, oh, shoot, man, my energy seems to be stabilized. You know, I'm losing weight effortlessly just by doing the farm work I do every day. And all these other things started coming in the back. So it's not one for me. You know, it all comes down to sovereignty. And the most sovereign thing I think every one of us can relate to that we do every single day is deciding what I will and won't put in my mouth, which has been a lifelong problem for me up until the last several years. And, you know, other things like deciding not to eat. That was, strangely enough, with all the crazy things I've done in my life, you know, I kept hearing about fasting, fasting, fasting. And then I heard Dr. Jason Fung talk about the one thing Jesus, Confucius, and Buddha all agreed on was the benefits of fasting. And I was thinking, okay, let me give this a shot. But Jack, I'll be honest with you. Of all the things I've ever done, that to me, even though I fasted in the Army and sapper school and stuff like that, you know, that everybody else was too.
Yeah, this wasn't intentional either. That was,
everybody else is having to do it. So, you know, we commiserate together to a certain extent. But now all of a sudden, the first time I did a 24-hour fast, you know, I'm getting there. And then I'm feeling all this anxiety. And then I'm realizing, you know what, I hit 24 hours. You know, that wasn't bad. All right, let me try 36 hours. Let me try 48 hours. Let me try 3 days and let me see how I feel while I'm doing it. And then I was also saying, well, how can I overlay this with a preparedness quotient as well? So then all of a sudden I started doing videos and thinking, how long can I do these farm chores while being completely fasted on nothing but essentially salt and water? And so I found out, you know, well, I didn't go past 3 days, but I did find out, you know, that all these different healing modalities I had no clue about. And as decentralized as I was in my farm is the exact opposite as I was to myself. So I'm trying to evangelize this to as many people as possible.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned three prominent religions, but almost every religion that's existed on the planet at any time, fasting has been a component of it. I'm a shamanic faiths in North and South America as well. Like there, and that we now today we can put science behind it and autophagy, and that there is a point, and it's usually at about 18 hours that the body begins to consume things that need to go away. Like your body will actually retool itself, but it has to be in that fasted state to do it. So, I mean, people that are like, I can't do 3 days or whatever, you know, hey, do what I've done at times. Do it 24, one meal a day, right? You go 20 hours all week long, you eat one meal a day, and you eat them 20 hours apart. So you're always at, you know, actually you end up being about 23 hours that way consecutively, even though you're still eating. So you're still getting that window of, you know, about 4 or 5 hours of autophagy all week long every day. And it's one of those things. I think the only reason people were resistant to it is because we become too freaking soft, right? Like we feel like, oh my God, no, I'll do, like, come on. Like you want to fast, go back and be an 80s kid and piss your parents off. You got to fast, right? And maybe that's part of the resistance, right? For our age group. Like we always sit to bed without dinner, right? Sucks, right?
Well, when you're somebody like you and me, where we both love great food, I'm realizing that 9 times out of 10, I got to grow it. If I really want the best on earth, I'm going to have to grow it in every single way imaginable. But also, as you well know, in permaculture, we stack functions. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm low in my vitamin D. I know because I got it tested. And I'm thinking, okay, how can we stack as many functions in here as possible? So I'm thinking, okay, I'm fasted. I'm in a fasted state. I'm doing my physical exercise, which, you know, it could be as simple as jumping up and down on a trampoline. It could be out there doing farm work. It could be whatever. But I'm doing it in the sun. I've now done a 180 on how I would do my business, where I would do it midday. Well, now I don't. I do all of my work for the most part midday so I can get maximum vitamin D. Try to see the 100% see the sunrise, because it opens up your body to the TCA cycle. And then if I'm lucky enough, maybe I'll see the sunset. Try to do both. Try to, you know, take my office outside. So I may be doing this while I'm fasting. You know, I've also discovered the benefits of fascial maneuvers, where you're out here doing these particular stretches that open up different parts and avenues of your body. And then also this thing called the olive tab. I mean, you don't have to do it all at once. You can just do one thing at a time. But I'm finding out, just like in nature, as you well know, every one step I move towards nature, I get about 10 of them back to me. And it's also things like my technical devices. Learning also from Jack Cruz and a number of others, I had the great benefit of meeting him down there twice in El Salvador. One time, I know he's trying to get me to move down there, but going in very deep detail as to what happens when you look at blue light when you're not supposed to. For example, these screens, you know, you have a blue light blocker. You can get software, Iris software, to put on your computer, or you can triple click your iPhone, or like you, I have an above phone. There are things that you can do, even if you're, let's say you want to sit down and watch a TV show with my wife. I got a screen. I even hacked this myself. I have a screen that I put over the TV that eliminates all the blue light. And I had to basically make this little hack up myself. So it's also knowing what not to do, making sure that as you're going to bed, man, you shouldn't be sleeping with your phone. It shouldn't even, if you can preferably not even keep it in a room, put it in another part, put it in the microwave, put it on airplane mode, do a bunch of different things. But it's all these different hacks that sound like they're overwhelming to a lot of people out there, but they're really not. It's just a matter of, as we already know as permaculture designers, we stack functions. So I can be getting my sunlight, doing my intermittent fasting, as you're just saying, because I do the very same thing. Do my intermittent fasting, get my movement in, do a whole lot of these things. If I'm going to work out, I try to do it outside in the sun. If I can't, I open up the garage door. All these things in which we can stack the functions and still get the benefits and see the needle move in a massive way, all at the same time, while the powers that shouldn't be are telling you, oh, yeah, it's okay to eat this stuff. It's okay to take this jab. It's okay to do this and that. And, you know, you have options. Everybody does. And it all starts with, you know, figuring out, like you said a moment ago, what is best for you. And for me, yeah, it's all these things.
Yeah, you know, the whole idea that the sun is dangerous is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Now, we were talking about this earlier for a totally different reason, but like, if I'm in a boat for 8 hours fishing, I'm using some skin protection because I don't want to burn. But I also tend to, like, you know, I have a really dark tan because I go out all the time. And the more you build that layer up, the less that it impacts you. And then winter comes and you fade back. At least I fade back out. Not you, bro, but me, right? And and then you do it again over and over. But that is evolutionary, right? And what do? We build up all this vitamin D in our summer, our time of plenty. We store it in our fat cells and we burn it off as we were forced to fast through our winters, right? Unless you lived in the tropics or something like that. But the bigger point is with the whole sun being dangerous thing. We've been around as a modern species. Best estimates are like 300,000 years, and that number just keeps getting longer. We developed clothing as a species about 100,000 years ago. Our proto-ancestors go back, you know, a million years at least. I don't remember ever seeing a baby get born with clothes on. Right? So we walked around on this planet pretty much naked for 200,000 years at least. It doesn't seem to me that we would have evolved to be damaged by the sun. And again, you could have too much of anything. That's why, you know, when it gets really hot, humans go into shade. That's a thing. But like, you know, Jack stuff, I'm not all in, but a lot of it makes a lot of sense to me. what is the first thing you do? You get up in the morning, you go out in the sun if you were living at that time. So I think our bodies are basically solar powered. The most important hormone in our body, we call it vitamin D. It's not a vitamin, it's a hormone. We can't make it without sunlight. My freaking dogs have Husky, and she lays out in the sun when it's 100 degrees, and what she do next? She licks her fur. Why? Because unlike us, they don't make it in their skin. They excrete it, and they lick it off their hair. Bears do the same thing. How would the very thing that gives us life be the thing we need to be most afraid of? And who's telling you that, right? I like how you call them the powers that shouldn't be. Like, maybe there's an agenda there. I'm just saying.
I think there absolutely is. I mean, everything we're officially told in terms of health, I can't put my finger on one positive thing. I can't honestly think of anything that's been, recommended to us. I'll be polite about it. Anything that's been recommended to us that actually moved the needle in a positive way. I mean, I'm sure there's something, I just don't recall what it is. And when it comes to all these different modalities, and like you said, I mean, there are things with Jack Cruz that, just because this guy is a neurosurgeon doesn't make him right, doesn't give him a greater share of common sense than I have or that you have. So there are things that I, categorically reject, but there are other things. It's like Bruce Lee said in the Tao of Jeet Kune Do, absorb what's useful. So that's what I do over here. And that's exactly like going back to our food forest.
Yeah.
There's the inspiration of probably 15 different titans on how to do a food forest. And I've cut and pasted all the best things from people like Stefan Subkoviak, who just happens to be a close personal friend, Bill Mollison, Jeff Lawton, all these people. There's nothing I have out there that's truly original. All I've done is cut and pasted the very best, and that's exactly what I'm trying to do with my health is, okay, does this make sense for me? Like, for example, in this paleo diet or whatever, I totally get the idea. Going back to what you said ago, if we've adapted to, let's say, a hot or humid climate, okay, we're going to have certain foods that are available to us. Mm-hmm. If we live in certain places, we're going to have food that's available to us. So for example, way up north, you're going to go to mostly a protein-based diet, a carnivore diet in the winter. In that short, narrow period in, let's say, Alaska, you do get some vegetables, and boy, do they grow quick and they grow big.
Yeah.
But by and large, a diet for you up there is going to be very, very different than it is for me in North Carolina or you in Texas. Mm-hmm. And if we're eating, and honestly, what he says there about your foods having an electromagnetic barcode of where you live, no, with the benefit of understanding his work, maybe eating a coconut in Boston doesn't make a whole lot of sense, or eating a papaya here in North Carolina doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, I do believe that these things can be consumed. Obviously, they shouldn't take the majority of your diet. But this is going right back to what you said. Cutting and pasting the very best of what these people have to offer served us extremely well when it comes to farming. I've had if I said his name right now, everybody would know who I'm talking about, told me that I can't raise the pigs I have the way I do. Told me that I couldn't do it. And if I said his name, everybody would be, wow, you would fall over it, but I do it. And he was wrong. Having those credentials and these people having these certificates, as I said a moment ago, having doctor in front of your name or PhD behind it doesn't enable you or give you a higher degree of common sense than it does me. In many ways, I've found out that in a lot of ways, these people have less. So I'm going to look at this stuff, examine it for myself, which is precisely why this event that we have coming up, we have a bunch of different people that are obviously going to contradict one another. And good. If you're a thinking person.
Hold on just a second. We ain't actually told anybody what this event is. Go ahead. Tell them what it's about. And then let's dig into that, because I dig that.
Yeah. Okay. So we have the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be coming up October 27th through the 31st. That's going to be in Harmony, North Carolina. And there's going to be an online version. Now, our chief speaker out there is going to be the great Barbara O'Neill. Everybody, I guarantee there's not a woman in this audience that doesn't know who that is. An absolute autodidactic genius when it comes to health. She is an absolute genius. Well, who else do we bring in there? We brought in people intentionally that are going to probably tell you that she's full of it or have a different opinion altogether. Some people, obviously, in a lot of different ways, they're going to agree. you have Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who's going to be talking about, you know, these things the government tells you. I probably can't say it live here on YouTube, so I won't. But basically, these things you inject that maybe you shouldn't have. You got Dr. Lee Merritt, former orthopedic surgeon, and is an absolute, she calls herself the medical rebel, and she truly is. I got food poisoning one time, used her protocol, and I was good to go in 20 minutes just by using a something that's very, very easy to find. And I know I can't say that on YouTube, but the initials are CD. You got Dr. Henry Ely, who shows everybody how to chelate a lot of these heavy metals that are out there, that are everywhere, whether falling from the sky or in your food or, you know, just in your environment. It could be a new car that you have that's off-gassing. And he shows you exactly how to do all these things. And then he got Jonathan Otto, who's showing you the benefits of things like red light and also combining that red light with things like the CD I spoke of a moment ago, and how the synergistic effect and also certain anthocyanins that you can take into your diet that makes the benefits from the sun and also from red light therapy on steroids. And you know the cool thing? And then we got people like Matt Roeske, who is off the top rope. A lot of people are not going to agree with him, and he is going to be telling you crazy things. I mean, absolutely insane things, like putting your vegetables in uranium containers that they had 100 years ago. Yeah, it sounds outrageous. On the face of it, it sounds absolutely insane. But he makes a really, really positive case for it. But it's 180 degrees out of phase with what everybody else is talking about. We got Doc Will Spencer, who's going to show you, and we used his product along with my BioComplete compost to clean up some very toxic places here in North Carolina. Then you got Pat Miletich, former UFC world champion. He's trained more world champions in the UFC than anybody else. And the guy, he's one of those guys, I mean, I feel lucky to call him a friend, man, but he can strangle you with just by looking at you. But former world champion, trained people like Matt Hughes and all the others. And he's going to show you that part that everybody kind of leaves out in terms of health. How do you defend yourself in easy, easy, simple ways? Stupid things like, you know, walking out to your car, looking at your cell phone as a woman. Men can get away with that sometimes, but a woman, you should never do that. Pat's going to teach you along with his girlfriend, and she's a former fighter as well. Then you have Jacqueline Bourne, former apprentice of Barbara O'Neill. And she is talking about things in a whole different light that honestly contradicts everybody else that's going to be on there. And then we got an acolyte of Dr. Jack Cruz. That's going to be Logan Duvall. And I was lucky enough to go to El Salvador with him the second time. I could not believe this guy runs a farmer's market in Arkansas and is among one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life, especially as it pertains to circadian biology. He also has a podcast himself, but he's going to be talking about things that there are people on that stage who are going to fund. I want a food fight. That's exactly what I want, Jack. I want to bring in all these people. I want all these people that have moved the needle massively in my life, and every last one of these people have in a very different way. And I'm not even putting the whole list on here. There's other people I'm sure that we're going to rope in as well. These are people that have moved the needle massively in my life. But there are fundamental things about all of these people that I don't agree with at all. So I go to their competition and say, okay, do they have something that's going to benefit me? And there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. So yeah, Barbara O'Neill's the headliner, but we have all these backup dancers that could easily headline a show all by themselves. And the idea is for everybody in there to cut and paste what you think is best for you.
I think that's great. I'm big on let's hear from everybody. Certain segments can be a little more annoying than others, but I view it this way. Like, because I kind of take the low carb approach and I eat mostly meat, I'm really not carnivore at all. People think that I'm militant on it, and I'm not. And I don't think that every single carbohydrate is evil. I do think if you eat enough sugar, I don't care where it comes from, you can spike your blood sugar and create insulin resistance. And a lot of people that are skinny fat, that's exactly what their problem is. But I also think that just about every intentional method of eating is about 1,000 times better than what most people do. So I think one of the reasons that something like carnivore works, the second you do that, you've eliminated 99% of the food that people feed themselves with. So whatever's in it that you shouldn't be eating, you're not eating. But if you go like more of the keto round type thing, even if you're not doing clean keto, which I highly recommend, if you're doing what you call dirty keto, where you're using processed foods and all, you've only can eat so much of that when you're holding your carbohydrate daily intake, let's say under 30 carbs, right? So you're back to an elimination. If you go paleo, where basically carbs are fine, you're still going to weight toward more protein, and you're going to eliminate all freaking processed foods. If you go primal, we're in the same space. The commonality here is it doesn't come in a box. It doesn't have five syllable freaking ingredients on it. It doesn't have artificial food colorings. And I'm sorry, I don't give a shit who's out there that's a vegan and says, well, we need fat from somewhere. It doesn't have freaking industrial seed oils in it, because that is one of the most toxic substances we can put in our body. It doesn't have these, the sugar is already bad, but, oh, I know, let's get sugar group out of corn, increase the fructose in it. Fructose is a liver toxin that is as toxic to the liver as alcohol, except you know something about alcohol, don't you, Billy, that once you drink a certain amount of it, what do you do? You stop, oh, yeah, or you go to bed, right? Like, there's no limit to how much fructose you can drink from a, you know, a standpoint of actually doing it. It'll trigger a primal thing to take in more while you can. And these things that work from just the diet standpoint, they all have a commonality, even when they look very different. Even like what I would call a very healthy vegetarian diet is going to have a lot in common in some ways with something more like primal or paleo. I'm not going to pick on anybody that's vegan or anything. I think it's a modern luxury to be able to do, in my opinion, because without supplementation, you have some real problems there. But all of it works better, and I love letting people hear from all sides and then decide what works for them, because I'd rather you be healthier and do it completely different from what Jack Spirko and Billy Bond says than lose your foot by the time you're 50 because you have type 2 diabetes.
I couldn't agree more, Jack, in so many different ways. I think you're absolutely pinpointing exactly the way I roll these days. Now, I said before that I went from 245 down to about 168. And what I've discovered along the way, and I've tried them all, you name everything but vegan, which you'll find me walking into a gay bar before you find me hanging out doing the vegan diet. I promise you that. No doubt about that. And then also Mark Sisson once said, find me one vegan tribe that isn't extinct. Well, that's not natural. You're never going to
find one in a fossil record. It doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't. And it can't. It's a modern construct. But like you said a moment ago, this is exactly what I'm trying to do. Okay, so I tried them all, you know, paleo, you name it. You name a diet, I've tried it. And I've had varying degrees of success in all of them. But because I had the benefit of having tried all these different modalities of health, I've kind of roped myself into realizing what works best for me. So, you know, talking to you when you were talking about the carnivore thing and how you adapted a little bit, I said, okay, let me try that. So I found out just going straight carnivore, man, I was losing way too much weight. So I said, okay, let me throw some stuff back in here. So roughly, I'm not counting, but roughly, if I keep my carbs at around anywhere between 150 to 200 per day, and like I said, I'm not even counting. That's just spitballing it there. I maintain a pretty healthy weight. I feel like I'm all right. No problems whatsoever. And then that's not to say that I don't twist off once a week or twice a week. On the weekend, we go to the farmer's market. I go pick up what I didn't grow. Then we go find a new place because, you know, this is something of a food town near Asheville. Go there and we say, okay, we're going to find a new place to go eat breakfast today. And then if we stay there long enough, we're going to eat lunch too. And believe me, none of it is on the list of the things I typically eat. So it's the Pareto principle, 80-20, nine times out of 10. And I'm finding out, even Jason Fung has figured this out. Dr. Jason Fung, he's a Canadian doctor, talks a lot about fasting, that there was no real difference between the people who fasted every single day on an intermittent thing or if they twisted off on the weekend, they didn't even really see a marketable difference. So I'm like, okay, all work and no play makes Jack a very dull boy. So I am definitely now during the week. I will say there are other things. I'm way more fastidious about the things I eat during the weekday. And for example, 2 days a week, I guarantee you, I'm going to eat some kind of fish. It's either going to be salmon or maybe some kippers. I hate sardines, but I'll suck them down every once in a while. Why? Because the DHA in that seafood is really, really awesome for me. And I find out that every single night, if anybody wants to try it and let me know how it works out for you. Go to make your dinner one night, fish and no carbs and just vegetables. Just try that and tell me if you don't have better dreams and sleep better that night. I find out that I do that. So once or twice, sometimes, usually twice or three times a week, I'll have some kind of fish. But by and large, during the week, you know, I eat sweet potatoes. I even eat bread as long as it's sourdough. I'll eat all these things, but I try to do them in moderation. But I'm telling you, when the weekend rolls around, bro, I eat anything, and then I'm right back Monday.
I get it. I mean,
Saturday,
for me, when I go off the reservation, it's more like a typical day for you. But, you know, I guarantee you, I know one thing you miss about Texas. Mexican food, right? I'm not going to go to a Mexican restaurant and just order a ribeye. I could do that at a steakhouse. No. So I'm going to have, you know, some chips or an enchilada or something like that. And occasionally we'll do some bread here. When we do that, we always do sourdough. Now, sourdough to me is not like, oh, look, this is better for you. It's actually an admission, though, that in general, for human beings, wheat is toxic, right? If wheat wasn't toxic, then we wouldn't need to ferment it to eat it in a more healthy manner. But like I made a friend that's actually been in the audience for a long time, but he now lives about a half a mile from here. And his wife is like a sourdough queen. She makes sourdough all the time. So when they have extra stuff left over from the farmer's market, they'll call me up and I'll try to buy it and always be like, hey, can we get some of those Indian beans or some shit? And like, he'll come over and do a little barter deal. And I threw him some black tip shark last time he was here. But since you do eat sourdough, and I know you just said to do the fish without the bread, let me give you a little hack if you're going to do fish and bread. Get some of that sourdough, right? Nice thin sliced piece of sourdough. You can do this with any canned fish, but a really great one to do is made by a company called Wild Planet, and it's their mackerel because it doesn't have that really that sardine-y thing that I like, but I understand why people don't like it. Take that wild mackerel stuff, pour some of the oil out of it into the pan, toast the sourdough, take it out, pour a little more oil in the pan, throw some garlic and some hot peppers in there. Then once you saute that until like the oil gets flavored with it and perfumed with it, crumble the mackerel up and throw it in there and then put it on that toast.
Oh, holy man.
Crap. Right? Like, and it's the simplest thing. It's a can of fish and a couple pieces of bread. But I promise you, you serve that to somebody who comes over to your house, unless they're like an anti-fish person, you blow them away. Maybe do a little bit of sliced tomato on top of it or something like that, or some fresh chili, or, you know, a little bit of cilantro or something, whatever does it for you. Capers, you know, depending on how you want to go with it. But like little simple things like that. So when people tell me, like, the reason I even brought that up, I can't afford to eat healthy. That freaking can of mackerel's $1.99. You're talking about like a nickel's worth of bread if you buy it, and some peppers and shit from your garden. Or okay, maybe you have to buy that. I don't know.
All these things. I mean, it goes back to that Bill Mollison quote. You know, the world becomes more and more complex, but the solutions are embarrassingly simple. I really think that same way. When people are telling me they can't afford to eat healthy, I am going to call BS on that in so many different ways. I go to town right now, and you were there when I was talking about it before. I can honestly say my pigs and chickens eat better than most Americans by far. Where do I source that food? Places like Chipotle. One visit to Chipotle in Asheville is enough to feed 100 chickens and 6 full-grown pigs for the entire week. That's one visit. Now, okay, if you don't have the capacity to grow it, well, there are other options as well. I mean, I remember there was somebody else talking about, look, man, you can go there, buy a rotisserie chicken, or better still, you can go buy, if you want to get the inexpensive pieces, go in there, buy a bunch of chicken legs. You can get them organic. You can get organic chicken legs for inexpensive, you know, very, very low prices. In fact, I bought some the other day to make bone broth out of because I ran out of chicken. So there are ways, and I'm looking at, okay, what's this price compared to the chicken breast? okay, I'm at least going to get the meat off these legs. I'm also going to be able to turn those legs because they're full of all the things I want to put in my bone broth. I can break those legs up, get them in the broth, the whole nine yards. There are options out there. And like you said, it, when it comes to the canned fish, and the product you're talking about is a very, I buy my kippers from them. It is a very good company. A lot of it is sustainably sourced. It is good stuff. And if you don't like fish, there are a bunch of other options out there. I just don't think people are reaching wide enough. And it, you know what I find curious is that if it's members of my family or people that are close to me, for example, I got a really good friend in Oklahoma, and we were supposed to, you know, we keep toying around the idea of trying to get a charter down in Texas home to go striper fishing or something like that. And of course, I'd be giving you a call if that ever happens.
I'll say you better.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll set it up, man. We need to go out in the Gulf of America and fish for some black tips like I just did with my grandson. That's what we need.
Even better.
Anyway, go ahead.
Even better. By the way, I love those pictures you were putting up there, man. I thought that was awesome. Yeah, even better. Or we can do one of the trips I did before up in Alaska, man, where I came back with 200 pounds of salmon and 60 pounds of halibut. So there was, and then out there with the killer whales. I mean, killer whales right next to the Boston Whaler that I'm in.
Yeah.
Man, that is a trip of a lifetime, and I know you would absolutely dig it. But there are so many different ways. I forgot where I was even going with this, but we started talking about fishing, man. Am I
eating better for less money? Right.
Yeah, like, you can absolutely positively do that. And, you know, even if you go out there and get, you know, beans or whatever else, man, there are ways to source this stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost a fortune. And you know what? Growing up in Pennsylvania, my grandmom was raising six of us. Well, we didn't eat meat, not meat that everybody else ate. If we did, it was cow tongue. No, go ahead.
I got you. No, I mean, I grew up in rural Pennsylvania too. We ate a lot of meat, but I'm going to tell you that an awful lot of it didn't come from the store.
No.
Like where I went to school, they closed the schools on the first day of deer season. And they still do to this day. Yeah. I know I'm old, but they still do it. Because if you were from a hunting family, you either went hunting or you slept in the truck so the uncle or your dad could use your tag. Right. Your sister that didn't want to hunt, you're going hunting, honey. Here's a blanket. Here's a thermos of some cocoa. We'll leave the truck idling with the heater on. And, you know, about 7 o'clock, honey, you shot a deer. Come on. We got to go put your tag on the deer. Right. Like we lived off deer meat. Bro, I ate more squirrels than I think most people have eaten chickens. Right? I used to shoot groundhogs for farmers in the summer because then they would actually let you hunt in the fall. And I've eaten groundhog. And I'm like, but shut up. You didn't eat it. You don't know. Like, there are a lot of ways. But if you do have to go to the store route, like, I tell you one of the best things, and I know you do the same thing, learn to use a knife, right? I mean, we did a show. I came on your show, and we talked about that and cutting meat. How much – the amount of money you can save is ridiculous. And the guy that kind of got me not doing it, because I was always doing it, but talking about it was a dude named Meat Dad off TikTok. And you were mentioning chicken. And immediately I thought of one of his videos. He shows this package of two chicken breasts for like $9.99 or $11 or whatever. And he goes over and he picks up a chicken, a whole chicken for about $8. And in, you know, a couple minutes you have it parted out. And there's the same two chicken breasts sitting right next to it. All the other stuff, and it costs less. He said if they cost the same, then you got all the rest of this food for free. And we live in a society, and I think this is part of our health problem too, though, because it shows a lack of mental health to me. And then bad mental health, you're going to make poor decisions, including about your physical health. The same person is going to me and you and go, you guys, first of all, they act like we're boomers, right? Like we bought our first house in 1971. I wasn't born yet and you were in diapers, right? Like, no, that's not us. Well, I'll never have a house. I can't afford a house. And that night, they're ordering a taxi ride for their taco on DoorDash, right? And so now you're eating garbage food for more money than you have to spend, and you're crying about not having money. That is a health issue because you live a life. Like, if you do that once a week, you do it once a month, no big deal. You do it once in a while, no big deal at all. You live like that, you are not going to be physically healthy by the time you're 35.
It's funny. Now I know exactly where I was going with this. That friend I have in Oklahoma, you just jogged my memory there. You know, it sure is funny. They got money to go on a European vacation. They got money to go out and buy side-by-sides. They got money. They got a lake. They got a houseboat at Texarkana or Texoma. They got one out at Ten Keller. They got all these niceties. And then I met up with him. I was going to Greg Judy's place one time, and he met me at a certain place. I want to say it was somewhere in Missouri. And I dropped off an entire pig that I processed for him. He didn't pay me for it. I gave it to him. He's a friend of mine, you know. And plus, honestly, I needed the freezer space because I had a bunch more sheep I'm about to put in there. I dropped this off to him, and he tells me, he says, man, I'm thanks for this, but man, I can't afford this, man. You know what they're charging? I said, hold on, bro. You just came back from a 2-week excursion on a boat all over Western Europe. You've done all these different things, and you're telling me you don't have it. Well, you know, and then, of course, he blames it on his wife.
Yeah.
Just like you said, Jack, a prime example, and I'm glad you brought that up with that guy with the chicken, because I was out there talking. Somebody asked, well, how many chickens can you get into a freezer that's above your refrigerator? So I said, okay, let me go ahead and try this experiment, because I had a bunch of chickens I need to process anyway. I knew that putting whole chickens in there, I already knew I could only get 8 of them. But if I were to piece them out, and then take the bones from the rib cage and all that, honestly, repurpose it, because I leave the stuff in there. When I piece out a chicken, I know I'm going to do it. I don't even take the guts out of it. Why? Because I'll take that whole carcass and I'll freeze it, and I make what I call a pig sickle out of it, and I'll feed it to pigs.
Yeah.
And absolutely.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, bro. So I was able. This is mind boggling. I stopped at 35 chickens. I was able to get in just the freezer that's above a fridge. Everybody that thinks I'm crazy, I got a video out there proving it. And all I did was pack, you know, 4 legs together, square them off, make them look square. Yeah. You know, you got to square it off. You can't.
So you've been Billy at Maver in the Army, and they give you this list of shit about this long and tell you to put it all in a duffel bag about this big. Or they give you a list that's 70% of that, and they tell you to fit it all in a rucksack. We were playing Tetris before anybody knew what Tetris was, and we got good at it. Anyway, go ahead.
That's exactly right. And that's why I'm saying, Jack, I'm so glad you brought that up. For the people that say, well, I can't afford, look, man, I've done it. And I guarantee the birds I'm growing, especially the heritage breeds, they have longer legs than your typical Cornish cross. So they're going to take up to some extent a little bit more room, but you can pack 4 breasts together. 4 legs together, 4 thighs together, square them off. 35 birds is what I got. And if I didn't have the video, I know nobody would believe it, but they can see it at my YouTube channel. 35 birds I stuck in that freezer. So I don't want anybody telling me that I can't put meat back. We might eat chicken. I don't know. Maybe it's despite the rumors out there. No, I'm not a big fan of chicken. There's a lot of other meat out there I prefer to eat. But we might eat chicken once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. But the utility of it and the cost of it is so great for all the people out there saying, hey, I'm having trouble putting bread on the table. Like you said, you can go out there and buy these highfalutin cuts, or you can go out there and buy the whole bird. I have videos. I'm sure Jack has some. I have videos that shows you how to break that entire thing down. And like I said, if you're going to raise them, why even take the guts out of it when I'm going to feed it to the pig anyway? I'm going to flash freeze it. Stick it in there, make these pig sickles. So I'm turning the excess part of that chicken that I don't want to eat into pork. So there are different. And if you don't have that, put it in a compost pile.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really raise chickens at all anymore. But when I do cold ducks, I do this. Well, I don't have a pig, so I don't feed them to the pigs, but the dogs eat them. I do the same thing. I'm not plucking a duck, a cold duck. It's not worth it. I'm not going to cook it that way anyway. I pull the feathers off the breast, and that's because I want the skin. And actually plucking the breast alone is easy. You don't even have to scald it, right? You pull it off, and you torch the few feathers you missed. And then I pull the legs out, and I just pull them out of the skin. And the cart, I go in. I do go inside because I like liver and heart. So I pull that out, and then the rest of it goes to the dogs. It's very quick. It's very efficient. Not everybody's going to do that because not everybody's going to raise animals, and not everybody's comfortable doing the full deed, not just doing like, there's a big difference in buying a primal at like Costco Business Center and cutting it up and going outside and actually slaughtering an animal. And I understand some people don't want to do it. I'm okay with that. But the larger picture here is doing what's practical and do what works. And I realized when you were talking about this, which people probably didn't know what you were talking about, when you're talking about feeding your pigs from Chipotle, if y'all want to know what he's like, he's not going through the drive-thru and ordering them burritos, folks. If you want to know all about that, go to my site, thesurvivalpodcast.com. Look up episode, just type in the search box, 3132. And this episode, Billy and I did about 5 years ago, he talks about how he basically raises chicken for next to nothing. And he raises pork for like 60 cents a pound or something like that. And it's off that waste stream because they throw all that food away.
Yeah, I've gotten it even tightened up even more. We raise our pork now for 21 cents a pound, even though inflation's going through the roof.
Yeah.
Because, Jack, the truth of it is there are so many different options out there. For example, there's a Asian grocery store that I go to quite frequently. Well, they got to pay a dumpster guy to come out there twice a week. Because, and then the footprint that they have, they can't afford a big dumpster, and yeah, it's only going to cost them more. Well, do you think I might be a blessing to them when I go there and say, look, all your produce, all this stuff you're throwing away, put it off to the side for me. I'll take care of it for you. Now, all of a sudden, they're only paying for one day a week. I am now a net blessing to that business. The bakery over here where they give me all this bread, and I mean, it's a 55-gallon drum if I want to go over there and get it. They give me all this bread that is, by the way, or absolutely organic. You could absolutely eat it. Everybody could eat it. But that's going to my pigs and chickens. I guarantee you it's light years better than that stuff you're getting from Tractor Supply by far. I know, I mean, there's a lot of lunatics around here, but at the same time, they have an awesome food culture. But for the people that are thinking, well, you live near Asheville, you can do that. I did the very same thing when I lived in DeKalb, Texas. So yeah, folks, don't tell me that it's not possible. You can go to high schools. You can go to all these different places. You can go to, in fact, elementary schools are really one of the best, because they throw away all that stuff. They throw away all that milk. There are ways. In fact, I really need to do a course one of these days about all the do's and don'ts of, you know, how to acquire these things. So if you're raising the animal, you can do it for absolute free. There's a guy down there in Georgia hit me up on Twitter one time. I even had him on my podcast because he had heard that episode with you. All of a sudden, he's out there going to all of these I recommended them before, but they're the places where they feed the homeless shelters. And all these places that can't sell their food, they go to the homeless shelter. Well, from the homeless shelter, it has to graduate to the dumpster or a compost pile. So he goes there. This guy is getting pallet after pallet after pallet, raising all of his pork for next to nothing. Outside of farrowing costs, that's the only cost I got in him. And that's the only cost he has in him. So the cool thing about it is that being able to evangelize this information out there, so many people are now saying, you know what? I don't have to be on the Tractor Supply bandwagon or the farm store bandwagon. There are waste streams out there. And I've talked about it before. University of Asheville, North Carolina offered me to go there. I was on the phone with a lady and I about dropped the phone when she told me, we're producing about 600 pounds a day of organic food waste from our cafeteria. Can you handle that? And then, of course, I'm on the other side thinking, oh, my goodness, I hit the jackpot. And then she hears the silence, thinks it's uncomfortable, and says, look, right now we can only pay you $1,000 a month to come take it, but we might be able to kick it on up to $2,500 in a little bit of time. So I'm making money on the compost I'm producing, making money. In fact, I don't even make money anymore on that, on the chickens and the pork. I gave away 3 pigs. I gave away 50 chickens. I gave away 6 sheep, all because I got 8 freezers out here that are plumb full. There's only 2 of us eating it, yeah, and I got to give it away. But I need these animals to also replenish, you know, to redo my land. I need them to look after land properly. Yeah, yeah, it all works together. And because of it, you know what? I'm eating the best food in the world, best produced. I know exactly where it came from. This isn't lamb that came from New Zealand. It's right here in Western North Carolina, and it tastes light years better than that stuff you're going to find at Costco, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking about that yesterday, too, as well. And on Monday, we talked about kind of the beef bottleneck and some ways around that with herd shares and stuff like that. And I said, but for a lot of it, I think sheep and lamb actually work better, because I know you've processed the whole cow and I have too, and it's some work. I can drink a beer and do a sheep in 30 minutes without breaking a sweat. And I'm talking from bullet to the head, skinned and finished, I can do in 30 minutes. And I can't break down the front quarter of a cow that's already aged and kind of firmed up in 30 minutes. Like they're really easy to do. And what made me think of it though, is your comment about it tastes better. People say lamb has a gamey taste. And the first thing I say is there's no such thing as a gamey taste. Show me where your gamey taste buds are. That's not, there's an off taste. That's what it is. And I have never had a pasture raised lamb or mutton or a Holbert, which I guess is the middle one. I just learned that this week, right? From America that has that distinctive flavor. That flavor doesn't even bother me, but it's one of those things, like I said about you and sardines. When I taste it, I can go, I understand why somebody else wouldn't like this, right? And I've never had that with an animal raised in, and I don't know what it is. I'm not even sure it's anything to do with New Zealand or Australia. It may just be the transport. I don't know, but it does have, if I ate a lamb chop that I bought at the grocery store from New Zealand, but you gave me a little piece of it, so I can't really identify it visually. As soon as I ate it, I'd be like, that's lamb. If I ate that from a lamb off of your property, I'd probably be like, it could be lamb, it could be beef, I don't know. It's like a really mild beef flavor. Like, there's something about it, and I'm not sure what it is, but I think we need to raise a hell of a lot more lamb in this country.
And it's so much easier. Jack, one of the reasons why lamb tastes different is they're using wool sheep and we're using hair sheep. That lanolin, the lanolin gives it that off flavor. It doesn't bother me one bit. I'll eat it just.
I never thought of that. No, you're dead on. Like almost everybody that raises them in our country raises Dorpers or Katahdins or what's the other one? St. Croix. Like almost nobody raises wool sheep here.
Yeah, and, you know, the biggest problem for us is going to be, you know, when you start raising wool sheep, then you're going to be on that bandwagon of dewormers, and that's just not a cool thing I want to deal with. But honestly, I could take and people think I'm crazy when I say it, but I could take a Katahdin sheep, and I could absolutely do a blind taste test with Kobe beef, and I'd guarantee if it's done right, you won't be able to tell the difference. But that's where I agree with you, Jack. So many people, and Greg Judy agreed, that he called sheep his unfair advantage. And I fully agree with him. Number one, I'm getting way more for pound. Number two, if I'm raising beef out there, it's going to take me roughly 28 months from the time that animal is born till the time I put it in the freezer. During that time, if I had a breeding pair of sheep, 9 times out of 10, with these smaller bodied sheep, you're going to produce twins or triplets every single time. And I'm going to have them birth every single year. They're ready to eat in 6 months, not 28 months. So I guarantee you, when you do the math on it, you'll find out that a breeding pair of sheep will produce far more weight over that 28 months than a cow. And that's provided, and like you said, Jack, man, I'm right there with you. Unless you have some serious equipment, processing a whole beef is a nightmare. So if you're going to do that and you want to process it yourself, what I'll do is I'll either gut and skin it myself and then bring it into the processor, which is really not a great idea because you're going to get dirt and stuff all over the meat, which you can do. Bring it into the processor. Tell them, look, break it down into primals. I'll take that. I'll even age it there. You could take a whole side if you want, but I'm telling you what, just one primal on a good-sized beef is a one-man carry all by itself.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, a sheep, like you can buy like a $14.95 I would spend more money, but you could buy a $14.95 gambrel from Walmart and a tree limb and throw a piece of cardboard underneath it so you can get rid of your waste easily. Like it is no different than doing a deer. In fact, a sheep and a deer are almost identical in every way. I would just say a deer might be just a little easier to skin. Because the skin on a sheep is just a little tougher to get to separate from what's the word I'm looking for, the fascia on there. But it's not hard or anything. And I really never thought about the whole hair sheep, wool sheep thing. That's interesting. On your earlier thing about freezer space, this guy can't afford a freezer. I just looked this up, right? I like to buy better quality stuff, but like a little Hot Point 8.8 cubic foot freezer, which is about three times the space of that place you shoved those chickens into, $299. And they got a 7 cubic foot on sale at Lowe's right now for $239. Now,
I'll tell you what I do, Jack. I'll take a regular refrigerator.
One self-processed animal that you just paid for the freezer.
Absolutely. And that's one cool thing about doing these smaller animals is that whenever you have a ruminant, you're going to want to age that meat. Now, here's the problem with most butcher shops. There was a time, I want to say about, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, you might be able to get them to age it for 2 weeks. These days, they're lying about it. If that meat comes back bloody, it is not aged. Yeah. You want to form what's called a pellicule on the outside of it. I can look at the meat and tell you whether or not it was aged. But the cool thing about doing these smaller bodies is I'll take out all the shelves in the fridge, take all of them out, put them off to the side. When I do that sheep, I'll cut him up into primals, which on a sheep is only really three of them. Yeah. But I'll take that sheep and I'll age him for 21 days in there. Now, the cool thing about pigs and pork and chicken, you don't have to age that meat. You don't even have to age any of the others. It's just going to allow the enzymes in there to form a pellicule, give it that tacky surface that says, okay, I am ready to rock and roll. And you can rent space in a locker all you want, but I promise you, I know where all the bodies are buried in the whole processing industry when it comes to mom and pop kind of places. Yeah. I know how they rip you off. They got to get that real estate out of there so they can get another one in. So they're never going to age your meat to the extent that they say they do. And it honestly, you lose it. And it depends on whether or not they're charging you on the weight, because when you age that meat, you're also losing weight because you're losing moisture out of it. But I can sit here and dry age a lamb for 21 days. If I want, I can go up to 45 days, depending on what you use, or don't age all of it. Age the parts that are really going to matter. For example, your chops. Yeah, you want to age that. Your leg of lamb, maybe you want to age that too. Do you need to age a hock? No. Do you need to age the front quarters? Absolutely not.
Especially if you're going to grind, you don't need to really do it. I still do a little bit. With my deer, I break it down into quarters, and I do the same thing you do. I have a garage fridge, and sometimes there's food in both of them, but I'll just move it all to one when we have a deer or two in, and I just basically I have like a thing that I built that I literally hang the legs and the front quarters and everything, and I can fit two deer into one big refrigerator that way. And if I can fit Texas deer are a little bit smaller, but if I can fit two deer in there, you can probably fit two lambs in there.
Absolutely. You can do it. And like I said, only the relevant parts that it means something to me. So it's going to be the leg of lamb, which I usually like to break down into lamb roasts. I'll take those leg of lambs because there's three major muscle groups, and it doesn't even matter the animal. You're going to have a teres major, a teres minor, and the other one escapes me right now. I'll break it down into its major pieces, and I'll age it that way, and then I'll wrap them up because there's only two of us. So there's so many different ways to go about this, but there are – and then coming full circle with the whole health thing. I know everything this lamb ate. It's out here eating grass. It had zero chemicals put in there. You know how I know? Because honestly, if they don't cut the mustard, they're already in the freezer. So if it looks like they're not making it, I've gotten rid of that stock. So now all we have are the ones out here that are going to do exceptionally well on nothing more than grass. And also because I live in a very steep mountainous environment, I need animals that don't lose condition when I'm running them through this mountain. So they got to maintain condition, produce live young, preferably twins or triplets. They got to get through this mountain. And then once you're out of the money, think about this, Jack, and a lot of people don't think about this. Once you spend the money on your breeding pair, and I would spend the money to get really good stock, this is absolutely a self-licking ice cream cone. Yeah. Now that I'm getting, let's say I got four ewes and one ram. Okay, he's going to go out there by the next year. I can rotate out a ram, let somebody else borrow, which I do. I borrow somebody else's ram from somebody I trust, and they take mine. Or we trade permanently, and whatever ram I got, once he's done doing his work, in the freezer he's going to go because I don't want problems later on. Yeah. So you can work out these networks. Now, all of a sudden, I got a meat-producing machine that doesn't cost me anything after the initial purchase.
Yeah.
So there's so many different ways to go out there and do this. But honestly, too many farmers, I'll be honest, are just plain lazy about their management practices. They want to move once a month and call that holistic grazing. No, that it doesn't work that way. Right now, this time of year, because of all the moisture we've had, I'm still moving, even though in dead of summer, I'm still moving my ruminants every single day because the grass is growing.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah, you'd have to with the as much rain as y'all have had. The only reason I don't do them here is I would have to hay 3 months a year, and it ain't when most people would in the winter. It's right now. Everything is brown. And people say, well, if you graze it, it'll improve, and it will eventually. But you know my place. I have about 4 inches of soil on 3/4 of my property, and then it's rock, and it ain't rocks. It's seabed. I'm growing on a parking lot with 4 inches of dirt on top of it is basically what it's like. But, I mean, other than your labor to make sure you keep them moved and whatnot, it's free meat because they eat grass, which, by the way, is what they're supposed to eat. It's kind of where I want to go next on the health subject here. One of the reasons people that do this tend to be healthier than people that don't is they're eating healthy food. So when I go to the store and I buy a piece of beef, it's probably better than buying a freaking ho-ho or a ding-dong. But it's still, how was that cow treated? What was that cow's last 6 weeks of life like in that CAFO or what have you, if it's not a grass-finished animal? Your animals are living on your property. They're eating the food they're supposed to eat. They're conditioning their bodies by moving through the steep mountains. The ones that are weak, they go away. And that's why is nature beautiful? Because if you're weak, you're gone. That's why nature is always beautiful, because as soon as it's not, it's dead. But it's more than that. The root of all health to me is the soil. Even if you never ate a plant, if you're a pure carnivore, what does your food eat? So can you talk maybe a bit about how soil health relates to human health? And we can see that where soils are depleted, even where people aren't starving, they're not healthy.
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that question because it really goes to the heart of what the issue is here in the United States of amnesia. You know, our number one export right now, and most people don't know it, is soil going down to Mississippi. And this is without a doubt our number one export here in this country because our management strategies are absolutely awful. So let's just first talk about what should be in the soil. My son who lives out near you, he does a lot of soil testing, looking under microscopes and stuff like that. Now, what we should see in a great pasture environment, we should have an equal distribution of both bacteria and fungi. We should also have nematodes, good nematodes, protozoa, arthropods. And then believe it or not, your top predator in that soil, and most people don't even think about twice about it, are your worms. Your worms, believe it or not, are at the top of that taxonomy in your soil. So, and then, you know, you got other things that are going to eat the worms, of course. But every single time a person puts dewormer into their animal, every single time, you are basically killing the nematodes, which are a source, a kind of worm, and you're also killing the top predator in that soil. So that's like the Serengeti. Your soil, in the most cases that we test, your soil is basically the Serengeti with nothing but gazelles out there. What's going to happen? It's going to be the same thing that happens in Yellowstone when they got rid of all the wolves. And then when they brought the wolves back, all of a sudden things that, you know, scientists never even thought about, all of a sudden streams that weren't running for years, all of a sudden start running again. Nobody knows why. It's just when you remove that top predator from the soil, bad things happen all the way down, just like it did in Yellowstone, just like it does in parts of Africa where they've absolutely gotten rid of the lions. So going back to that soil, if I got, you know, to be considered biocomplete in that soil, you are required to have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 135 micrograms per gram of both bacteria and fungi. Now, I'm not even talking about the rest of it, but that's just the basic load. 50-50 split. Jack, what we see overwhelmingly, and I think the only place I've ever looked that it wasn't that way where I actually tested the soil was a polyphase. And it should be, in a perfect environment where you're running animals, it should be about a 50-50 split of bacteria and fungi. What we find is all bacteria, no fungi. And the reason why is because we are roasting the fungi because we cut our grass way too low, or we let our animals graze it way too low, plumb to the ground. Okay, well, you're burning up all your fungi out there. The only thing that can withstand it is the bacteria. Because of our management practices, we overcompact the soil, making it very, very favorable to nothing but bacteria. And so we have bacteria-ridden soils. Even go to any orchard out here where they have nothing but a monocrop of trees out there. What are you going to do? I do a soil test there. Jack, you know as well as I do, in a forest environment, you should have some you should have some fungi out there.
You should be fungi dominant in a forest environment, or even that's a savanna mimic. That should be dominated. Now, that's really a one-to-one because the fungi are so much larger. So when people hear fungal dominated, they think it's like 90% fungi and 10% bacteria. No, but you should be in a fungi dominant situation in a savanna mimic, and you definitely should be even in like a woodlot.
Absolutely. But what we find, if you have an old growth forest, well, let me start with a food forest or orchard. Yeah. You should be at least 10-to-1 fungi to bacteria. That's not what we see. It's almost zero fungi. And so what does that mean? That means they got to sit here and put a bunch of chemicals on there that nobody should be eating. And you say, well, I wash it off. Okay, yeah. Try a nicotine patch. Put that on. Does it go into your body? It's the same thing with the drugs they're spraying on this stuff out here because it got a monocrop. So we find out that it should be 10-to-1 in a orchard environment. Old growth forest can be up to 1,000-to-1. Yeah. And that's exactly what we want in the ideal circumstances. But we find out that you're going to have all kinds of problems in your pasture if you are not seeing after the soil. So how do we do it? We don't overgraze. We don't overcompact. We never, ever, ever leave bare soil. Go out there, drop a bale of hay on it if you have to. I don't care what you do. And then you're going to find out that that one step towards nature in terms of your management, you're going to get about 20 of them right back to you every single time. So
if you go to nature and you see bare soil, something bad happened.
Absolutely.
Nature does not have bare soil. Bare soil means disturbance occurred, or we intervene and we are the disturbance, right? And like the whole thing about they wash it off, the reason I like facepalm when you said that is I do so much with like compost teas and IMOs and stuff like that. And it just made me think of the one day I had like this little tiny bit left and the sprayer wouldn't really go anymore. And sitting right next to me is one of my wicking beds. And it was just full of wild bergamot. I can't think of what everybody else calls it. The little flowers. It's like a mint family thing, whatever it is. And I just look at the little bit that's left in there and just dumped it. Right. It never hit the soil because there was so little of it. It just stuck to the tops of the plants. I go out there a week later and it's like a pyramid. The center that I dumped it on is freaking 8 inches higher than the rest of it all growing uniform. How did it manage to grow when I dumped it on there? Well, it absorbed it through the stigmata in the leaves. So when you go out and you spray like a fruit tree, and it's concentrating all its energy, by the way, in that apple or that orange or that peach or whatever it is. That plant absorbed that toxin and concentrated it in the thing you're eating. And you can wash it until the skin comes off of it. You can wash it down to the pit. Whatever's left of it and you eat, you're eating it. And you're eating it in concentrated form. That's another reason I do my own birds for eggs, because what do they feed them? Soy. I don't need no more estrogen, bro. I'm good. I'm a man, right? But you feed soy to a chicken or a duck or any egg-laying bird, that's an ovum, right? That's what that is, right? And so where is a female going to concentrate its estrogen? It's going to concentrate it in an egg, right? That's what's going to happen. And that's actually been scientifically proven, and the scientists that proved it thought it was a good thing. I mean, I've read the studies on that. Like, they're like, you can start feeding these birds a soy diet, and within 11 weeks, the amount of phytoestrogens, which is a fancy way of saying estrogen, in the egg goes up like 75 times normal. Now that's what you're eating. That, why do you think we got 13-year-olds that aren't fat walking around with moobs?
Right? Yeah.
Boys, right? Like, that's why. I'm sorry, sure. You know? And then people talk about how you know, people have been eating soy forever for so long and they didn't have – yeah, what kind of soy? Do you see people in China just sitting there shoving down all the soy-based bullshit that we're eating? No. They're eating what? Soy sauce, fermented. Tofu, fermented. Like everything that we say is toxic, if you could point to somebody even remotely healthy eating it, it's fermented. And I know you know about Weston Price, right? So like,
oh, yeah.
He actually wanted to find, you're talking about there's no vegan tribes, or he wanted to find at least vegetarian, right? He couldn't find one. But what he did find is every single traditional society had a staple fermented food as part of their diet. And I think that goes to our gut health too, which is another layer in all this.
Well, it goes right back to that same, the same soil biology. I mean, if that's off and we're taking what was grown in there and we're putting it in us, well, we're going to have a problem. And there's no doubt about that. I mean, that's where, when you were saying kind of, when you look at the equivalent of what's happening in that soil and why people like Paul Gauci up there in, I think, Oregon or Washington, wherever he's located, why he can eat one apple a day, quite literally, and not have any problems, is because the nutrient density, or Stefan Subkowiak, when I visited him up in Canada, the reason why these people are able to eat so little and you feel so satiated is because the nutrient density is able to make it to the fruit, number one, without the poison being on there, and number two, the soil is so punchy where, you know, instead of that 135 micrograms per gram, we're producing right here compost that has anywhere between 1,500. So it is light years beyond everything else out there. But if the soil ain't right, it's not going to translate into the fruit or the garden or the animals that you grow on it. Because it's going back to Jack Cruz, it's that electromagnetic barcode that they acquire from that solar panel we call grass that they ingest. And if that is not getting what, I mean, John Kemp, the Amish guy, John Kemp, he talks about it all the time. That why are you going out there individually giving your cow selenium when you could sit here and spray a mixture over all the grass, save you a pile of money, and at the same time, you get what you need into your animals. And it's a self-licking ice cream cone. Once again, once you put these things in stasis, you don't have to worry about it again, ever again, as long as you don't do stupid things like overcompaction, overgrazing, and all the other things we've talked about. So yeah, it goes right back to, and that's part of what, like Pat Miletich, he's one of the people on here. Well, that's one of the things that he does right now, is he works a lot with soil science along with Dr. Will Spencer, and how they're sourcing extremophiles from certain parts of the planet, doing the very thing we're talking about, where these extremophiles, let's say they're facultative organisms that only come around when, let's say, your neighbor just sprayed glyphosate out there. Well, you're not doing it, but it got on your property. Well, it's going to ruin your food. Well, they have extremophiles out there that just come alive long enough to go ahead and eat those things up, tie them in medium and long chain carbonic acids, then they go back to sleep until it happens again. So yeah, these things can absolutely positively blow up in the biggest way possible if you just worry about your management. Like Jack, the pictures you were sending me about your garden, you don't produce a garden like that. You don't produce chambachinos like that unless you have soil that is very, very, very alive. And if you don't have that, then everything else downstream, if you're going out here with Miracle-Gro, good luck to you. You're putting salts in their soil, essentially, and you're going to be on that bandwagon forever and a day. But when you can put some really good biology out there, it becomes something that can sustain itself as long as you don't do anything foolish.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we, like, if somebody wants to start taking control of their food, their health, their vitality right now, can you like drill it down to like three or four things you should say they should start doing right away?
Yeah. First of all, right off the bat, manage your light. And I'm telling you from my own standpoint, see the sunrise every single day and be careful about the light you're looking at when the sun goes down. There was a reason why Obama and the rest of the gang got rid of all the incandescent light bulbs, because number one, they were full spectrum. and your body benefits to a certain extent from that. When the sun goes down, you really want to be careful about it anyway. But yeah, light sensitivity, number one. Number two, I would say what really works for me is eating as local, everything within my zip code as I possibly can. I want to source it. Not to say that occasionally, remember Pareto principle, not to say that occasionally I don't eat things that don't come from here, but by and large, there's an old boy down the road selling grits that he grew. Okay, I'm going to eat that. There's a lady over here selling cheese. I get that from her. I'm going to eat as local as I possibly can. And then finally, MD, I said it before, but I'll say it again. MD doesn't mean medical deity. They have their place. Okay, yeah. If I get a bullet wound, okay, an MD is who I want to go to. But for a chronic illness, I'm going to go for the people that we have coming into the Sovereign Health Summit. We do have one MD. Actually, we have two MDs in there. We got them coming. But by and large, a lot of these chronic health conditions can be solved just by really good diet, just by really good lifestyle. Okay, you want to go have a drink? Go have it. Don't do it 7 days a week, though. You know, you want to smoke? Okay, do what Jack Crew says. Do it outside in the sun. Okay, if you want to engage in these things that are going to be, you know, deleterious to your health or potentially could be, like, for example, I'm looking at blue light on a podcast, but I'm doing it midday when there's blue light in nature. I also got my feet on a grounding mat that isn't going into the wall plug. It's independently grounded outside. So I also have these mitigation strategies, even when I have to engage in activities that aren't necessarily going to be the best for me. I am grounding. I'm G'd up from the feet up, and I mean grounded. I'm grounded right now, even though I'm inside this studio. Even though there are things that aren't necessarily great for me, I'm also at the same time trying to do the things that are going to benefit me. I could probably list a long list of other things, but honestly, sunlight, get the best diet you possibly can, and be mindful of the things that are going to take you backwards.
You know, we've got some talk here from a vegan, and they always talk a lot, probably more comments than anybody else. But this is where my overlap with them goes. But it's also where we differentiate. Did it exist before we were plowing fields? Right? So if you go back in time, right, and people say, well, you know, there's lots of vegetarians in India or whatever. What are they eating? Rice, beans, and grains. Okay. Where can I go gather that in a sufficient quantity to feed a tribe without plowing a field? And the answer is you can't. Now, what you can find is a lot of herbs, right? A lot of plants that are edible. I mean, this thing here, right? These things here, basically, they're unaltered from the way they grew in nature. And if you was walking around in the woods and you found this, you might bust this open and see if it's edible, right? And especially if you saw some animals eat. And I know you know a pig will eat the hell out of that.
Right?
They love that stuff. That is where the plant portion of our diet came from gathering, not from growing. And then we became a horticultural species. And I think that's a natural evolution that we cultivate plants. But we didn't really start this whole break off a square and, you know, put slave labor to use. At the time it was humans. Today it's in the form of petroleum into tearing up the ground every year and growing these high carbohydrate staples that need a lot of processing before we can eat them. A lot of beans, I don't hate beans or nothing. I'm not hating. I'm just saying a lot of beans, if you eat them without seriously cooking them, they'll make you sick as hell. Go try to eat a handful of wheat as it comes off the shaft. Go ahead. You'll die. You'll choke to death, right? Like, you got to get it out of the shaft first, and then you got to grind it. It's still like trying to eat a stone. You are not a bird. You don't have a gizzard. You have a big liver. You're meant to live as an omnivore, but we're also, I mean, we're biologically set to eat meat. But I think, like, the biggest thing you can do is look around and think, if it was 25,000 years ago, would this be here? And then the next thing to think is, even if I prefer it cooked, could I pick this up off the ground and with little more than breaking it over a tree or something, shove it in my face and eat it? If it passes either of those, it's probably human food, right? if you have to take enormous steps to be able to eat it, at least put it in the moderation category, right? I mean, and then, like, how many steps were there? Like, you know, there's a difference between brown rice, especially, like, if it was something Mr. Fukuoka grew, right? I'd actually, it's too bad he's gone. I would have loved to have tried that. Or is it something grown in Louisiana that was polished like a pearl, that had every bit of actual value from a nutritional standpoint stripped from it and made into a waste product before it got to you? Like, and I, did you ever hear about the shit where they were, there was plastic rice coming out of China?
Oh yeah. They're not just there, but also India.
So but here's my point, but it took an investigation to find it. You'd think if I bought some rice that was like half rice meal and half plastic, extruded out of a thing, and I cooked it, I'd be like, oh, this doesn't taste like rice. Well, that's because you don't know what rice tastes like. When you're eating that denuded shit, it has whatever flavor you cooked it in. It doesn't have a rice flavor. So the fact that you could eat, like, that's not what we're – and again, I'm not a purist. You know that. I'll sit down and eat a burrito with you, man. That's okay. But I'm not going to live on that food. And I think if we just met, like you said, a Pareto principle, 80-20, maybe go 90-10. If most of the food you eat passes the caveman test, whether it's plant or animal, doesn't really matter, you're probably going to be healthier.
You know, you brought up India, and I'm glad you did, because for the vegans out there that say, well, look at India. Well, look at them. They got record numbers of diabetics off the charts right now in India.
Yep.
And nobody can seem to figure out why, but there are intrepid scientists out there saying, okay, well, they eat a high deuterium diet. Number two, going back to the sunlight thing, how many of them are working in call centers or data centers? In fact, I had one on the other day. They ended up putting me to somebody that was in America, this hood rat that was on the other end of the line. I said, hey, can you reconnect me with a guy in India? Because I at least understand his English a little bit. But anyway, they have a record number health crisis, and nobody, very few people are talking about it. And, you know, plastic rice and some of these other things. But there are other big things you need to be looking for out there. People buy honey from the store, and they think, oh, this is honey. It's legit. The people in China have gotten so good at synthetic honey that we have to look at it under a microscope to be able to tell the difference. That's how crazy it is. So, yeah, all of us have to be careful about as best we can. You bring up rice. Okay, I buy rice specifically from one farm in South Carolina, at least my wife does, and everything about it, Jack, it has an aromatic smell to it. It almost smells like
it. I know what you're talking
about. Yeah.
It has that smell. Yeah, yeah.
It's
totally that smells different. Good, right? It's very appetizing.
Right. This isn't Uncle Ben's, where, like you said, they stripped everything out of it. I don't even know if you can call it food. I will go spend extra money, and it's really not that more expensive. But, I mean, I don't need a whole lot of rice, but when I do, you better believe it's this stuff we get from South Carolina that we keep in the freezer, and you got to. And so that's what it's going to take. Sadly, we live in a world right now where the toxicity is off the charts. Now, like you, Jack, believe me, I will put a hurt. There's only one place around here, or it used to be around here, that sells authentic Mexican. Okay. Yeah. It still ain't as good as Texas, even on a good day. It still ain't as good as Texas. I mean, you partake of these things, but you don't make it an everyday habit, and you do the best you can. So yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, the bottom line for all of us is I often say, and it's an old army quote, and I know you know it, it's called stay alert, stay alive. These days, you just can't eat what they're putting out in front of you. You're going to have to be. And honestly, when people, if there was any positive to come out of COVID, at least people were cooking again. I agree with Michael Pollan. I think you should be allowed to eat anything you want as long as you make it. I really believe that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. And even on the whole grain thing and all, I'll just take that to another level. You have to grow it, and then you can do it, right? Like, if we just did that, the amount of junk carbs we eat would go to almost zero. It's a lot of work to produce a pound of wheat. It's a ton of work to produce it. Like, we live in this artificial abundance of this cheap-ass agricultural junk stream is what I consider it, because we can enslave a massive amount of energy through the use of diesel fuel and gasoline, right? If we didn't have that, like, and that's actually done more for society than just about anything else, for everybody that hates it. Yes, it has created this junk ag stream and it's industrialized seed oils and everything else. But like, man, the freedom humanity has been granted by abundant energy is something that I think the average person would only have to live without it for 1 week. And you'd never hear them bitch about it again. They would shut up forever. You know, go camp off grid and you don't get to take a whole bunch of shit you bought from 7-Eleven with you. Right? Here's your knife. You know, here's a slingshot. Here's a blowgun. Here's a tent. Catch you in about 14 days. That person will come back and defend electricity for the rest of their life.
That's what it takes. I mean, and I think we're at that place right now, Jack. I think we've become, to a certain extent, so decadent that it's going to take the crucible of really hard times for us to wake up and see the light. I mean, I can't find any place in history. Well, there might be one where you have a very decadent society that reformed itself without great hardship. There's only one, and it's an ancient example, and I'm not even sure that counts. But every single society that hit this level of where things just come a little bit too easy, you know, yeah. We're in that fourth turning, you know, in that Strauss and Howe book called The Fourth Turning. We are at that time right now where we've had it too good for too long, and that pendulum sooner or later will swing the other way. And those that don't see it, well, they're going to be doomed to repeat it. And honestly, the doom could be in the worst kind of way, but we don't have to be that way. There are solutions out there where people can be growing this stuff at home, whether, you know, you don't have a farm or you don't feel like you have enough space out there. You can be growing stuff in the windowsill. You can be growing microgreens in a spare bedroom. You can be growing mushrooms in a closet. All these little things are not that little when you add them up. You can go to a farmer's market or find reliable people. Like, I don't grow rice. Nobody around here grows rice. But we know a place that's in close proximity where we can get it. So do what you can. And then what you can't, you know, just go out there and find reliable.
You can, right? Source the best that you can. And then, like, sometimes just live, right? Like, the people that are sick are not the people that go off on a bender once a week or once every 2 weeks. It's people that live chronically this way. And you know, I mean, I did for part of my life. You did for part of your life. I mean, it's just a thing. You know, we tend to act like water. Remember Bruce Lee, you mentioned what you can do. He also said, be water, my friend. And that can be a very good piece of advice. It also can be a very bad piece of advice. It depends on how you interpret the context. And so water will flow downhill, you know, 90 degrees from contour, as Jeff Lawton teaches all the time. In other words, it will follow the easiest route. That's what water always does. And water goes from this beautiful trickling stream to something very, very destructive if it's in excess or if it's in too much of a downhill run. And it's very similar to how our health erodes. Like these little things that people tell you are unhealthy in moderation, your body is amazingly resilient and amazingly adaptive. But if you keep pounding something, you know, water created the freaking Grand Canyon, right? And you don't want that done, you know, at an epigenetic level to your body, which is what many people are doing to themselves on a daily basis. The average person in the United States is if they're not a type 2 diabetic, they're still highly insulin resistant. They call it pre-diabetes. And, you know, it's actually, I think I don't think we should call it diabetes. Type 2 should not be called diabetes. It should just be called insulin resistant. And the question is, how insulin resistant are you? Because it's this idea like it's like a dimmer switch. You know, their person is an A1C of a 5.8. Oh, they're pre-diabetic. It's a 5.9, now they're diabetic. No, wait a minute. Right? Come on. That does not track logically. And then they say, what? I got diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
No, you ate yourself into diabetes and you can uneat yourself out of it. And that same person will tell you, bro, I can't afford it. Right? What do they spend it on insulin?
Exactly.
Right? What if they spend that on their health? They would be healthy, spend the same amount of money and not have diabetes. Or again, insulin resistance is what it really is. Man, this has been a great talk. Hey, talk to people about your podcast and your upcoming event again and your YouTube channel.
Sure. The YouTube channel is Permapastures Farm. The podcast is called the Permaculture Pimpcast. And the event we have coming up, it's called the Sovereign Health Summit. It's going to be October 27th through the 31st. It's going to be in Harmony, North Carolina. Right now we have a, you can do it electronically if you can't be there in person. But if you want to be there in person, I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff going on that time of year. I mean, we got apples, which by the way, I was out there picking today. I got apples coming out of my eyeballs right now. We got early, mid, and late apples here at this farm. But anyway, at that time, if you want to visit one of the local apple orchards out here, we got that going on. We got the leaves are going to be turning at about the same time right there on the parkway. All these things, so many, it's a wonderful place to be. No humidity, very, very low. Well, if we have any at all, it's very, very low because of the altitude. But honestly, we got all kinds of people out there. Barbara O'Neill's our headliner, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Lee Merritt, Dr. Ely, Jonathan Otto, Matt Roski, Dr. Will Spencer, Pat Militich, Jacqueline Bourne, and of course, Logan Duvall, and finally, AJ Richards. All of these people don't necessarily agree on everything, and that's exactly what we want. So you can go out there, cut and paste what works best for you, or dismiss everything out of hand. It doesn't even matter. Come out there and find out how the needle can move for you in a big way. Jack, I can't thank you enough for having me on, man. It's been too long. I love having you on my show because you blow everybody's mind. And by the way, my wife just signed up for your latest class, man. I think.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she signed up for your latest class. And I was like, I'll tell you what, the guy, because she was in the military as well, I think she's really going to appreciate your teaching style and how you're able to funnel a massive amount of information out there and not waste anybody's time doing it. So, you know, for the people out there that are listening, man, they really need to sign up for that thing if you still got spots available. But she's looking forward to that because she won't. I learned from you how to prompt these things, but she won't listen to me. So let me bring in Jack Spirko. She'll listen to you. So
that's awesome, man. We do. By the way, we do still have some seats available for that. And it's the first time that we didn't sell out of running it five times the day we dropped it. We still have a few left. And the best way for people to find it, if they want to take it, is go to jackslaws.com. And on the courses tab, look for the ChatGPT course. And I want to say something. Thank you for bringing that up, by the way, Billy. I think part of what hurt us yesterday is we kind of changed the way we're doing this. And so we broke not our server. We broke Stripe's server. And so Tom created this kind of like when you go on like Ticketmaster, where you get in a line, he created that. And so the landing page kicked over to that. So there were people going there yesterday to sign up, and all they were getting is the thing that says your place is held and click here to buy. And they couldn't verify what they were buying. So we have fixed that. If you go there now, jackslaws.com courses and look for the entrepreneur course for GPT. And I hope she really gets a lot out of it. And I'm sure it'll help your business a lot. I mean, and I'll just say to anybody that's listening, especially because some people may have come in and listen to you and don't know much about it, this is for people with a business, this particular course. We have other things we teach that are permaculture related or business related that you don't have to have a business already. If you don't have a business or at least a damn good plan for the business you want to build, this one's not for you. Don't give me your $300. But if you got a business, man, we will light you on fire. We've had Billy, I don't know if you know this, now that she's taken it, every time we run it, she can retake it for free. We have people that took it already that somehow they didn't get the memo on that. They were asking us, how can I buy it a second time? And can I get a discount if I buy it? No, you don't have to buy it. She's going to go into an alumni group after she's done with the training, and you're connected with hundreds of other entrepreneurs that have been through that all can share information and work together. So thank you for bringing that up, because I probably would have forgot to tell people that there are some spots left, and that's the best way to get there right now.
Well, she's definitely looking forward to it. I know with what I learned from you in the past, without even taking the course, I've made, I mean, thousands of bucks. And it's, you know, I went into it, I'll initially say, initially kicking and scratching, but honestly, it's one of the best decisions I think I've ever made. And it moves the needle in a big, big way. So I'm glad you're going to get her tightened up. Instead of me telling her, hey, put this into whatever, she's going to hear it straight from the master. And, you know, it'll create more peace in this house. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, it's always asking, we're talking about the laws of life course. No, that's not out yet. That's on me today, on Tom. I'm wrapping that up, but that'll be coming too. Hey, man, thank you for being with us today. Again, guys, check out permapasturesfarm.com. Check out Billy's YouTube channel. Check out the Health Summit. I'm going to have links to all this stuff in the show notes. Now, if you're on the video right now, you're watching live right down there, there's a link that will take you over to my site where we put all of that with the audio side that goes out to the podcast services. If you click it this moment, while we're still live, it won't work because we're not quite done yet, but it'll be up in about 30 minutes from now. Billy, man, thanks for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jack. I appreciate it.
All right, guys, real quick, I want to wrap up fast today because we did go a little bit long. I want to remind you about our item of the day today. It is the stainless steel 8-tray Excalibur food dehydrator. This thing's on sale for $170. We talked about a lot about food today, including producing your own food. I just did a show last week on preserving food with dehydration. I know everybody wants to go to Harvest Right and get you one of them big old freeze dryers now and everything, and they're beautiful. They're wonderful. They're great. They're also extremely expensive and a little bit fussy. You got to kind of dial them in. A dehydrator, you cut the food, you put it on the tray, you stick it in there, you set a temperature, you push a button, you set a timer, you walk away, you come back, it's done. It's that simple every time, all the time. And this one is a great deal. Again, the metal trays are a game changer because when you're done, if there's any kind of residue or anything on, just throw them in the dishwasher or even if you wash them in the sink. I have the old style one. The whole thing was made out of plastic. I really want this one. But the damn thing I own is 15 years old and it refuses to die. And it has those kind of plastic sheet covers for the trays. And, you know, they can get nasty and they get really hard to clean. This is the best thing I've seen under $200 in the dehydrator space. I used to say Excalibur and then everybody else. But if you have to go less expensive, go ahead and do it. With this thing coming at $170, I'm going to say just get an Excalibur. The company stands behind their product 100%. They build some of the best equipment out there. And again, this is our item of the day, and you can always find our item of the day, and you can help us out no matter what you buy. If you start your online shopping at tspaz.com, T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. That just redirects to a section of my main website, the Survival Podcast. That's all the reviews I've done. Everything there, I own it, I bought it, and I'd buy it again, or I wouldn't. All the categories are alphabetical. You can find anything you want there for your needs, for your kitchen, for your prepping, for your permaculture, anything that I've used anyway. I really don't recommend things other than the things that I use myself in my home. And, you know, there's times you might find a product there, the review's there for legacy reasons, and there'll be a note, and it says, here's the new recommendation. When I find something better, and I wouldn't buy the old thing anymore, even if it's still available, I change it. I'm always recommending the things that are in my home. I've been waiting for one of my haters to deny that. I was just like, throw all my shit on a table and take a picture of it, like a selfie or something. But nobody's challenged me on it yet. It's just the reality, though. It's 100% stuff that we use in our home, or we wouldn't recommend it to you. I hope you got a lot from Billy today. I want to remind you guys again, I am going to be in West Virginia on Saturday. I am doing the keynote at the West Virginia Homeschool Convention. And Billy and I were talking a little bit there about AI. That's what I'm actually talking about. And I imagine I'm going to go into a mixed audience, like really skeptical, kind of middle ground and all in on this. Because, you know, we're talking about West Virginia. We're talking about homeschool families, very traditional, very conservative. Kind of people I love, but they tend to be skeptical of like this emerging technology and all. What I'm going to be talking about is how to use AI to teach and therefore how to use AI to learn and accelerate learning. And so you'll benefit from that whether you have homeschool kids or not, whether you have kids or not. And I keep saying this, but I really mean it. Homeschooling is one of the best things in the world for the liberty movement that there is. Even if you don't participate in it, it's worth supporting. Because it's kind of like self-custody in Bitcoin. One of the reasons you can mostly trust an exchange is because you don't have to. Because people like me self-custody with hardware wallets and stuff. When your local school district knows, if we blow it completely, no, they can't just move to a different school. Like, they don't have that ability. But they can just pull their kids out and take them home. They think a little bit harder about what they do. And homeschool kids have done traditionally better than the people out of the system as well. My grandchildren, we homeschooled them for 5 years. I'll be talking about that story as well. But come meet us, come hang out with us. And then the other thing I wanted to tell you guys real quick about this, just we are going to have a meetup. If you don't want to come to the talk and everything, 6:30 to 9:30 at the Brick Salt Kitchen and Bar at the Marriott Town Center in downtown Charleston, 6:30 to 9:30. You don't have to RSVP. There's nothing like that. All you do is show up and look for a bunch of cool people. That'll be us. Come over, grab an app, grab a dinner, grab whatever you want, grab a beer, have an old fashioned, whatever it is you want to do, get a water, a soda, a tea, it doesn't matter. Just come hang out and meet some really cool people if you're anywhere near Charleston. With that, I'll say goodbye. This will be our last live stream of the week. We are moving on to a expert panel show that's audio only. If you've tuned in today and we're new to you and you don't really get what I'm saying, I do 3 live streams a week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Thursday, I do an expert panel show. This is for people that I've picked up over the years that are really great at what they do. The audience sends questions in for them, and they answer them. Because of that format, live stream doesn't work. So that's an audio-only show. So you can pick it up on Apple Podcasts. You can pick it up on Spotify, Pocket Cast, you name it. Value for value, like on Fountain FM as well. Or you can just go to my site and hit play. So we'll have that coming out for you guys tomorrow. And I'll see you Monday. And those of you that got into the AI class, Monday is when we actually start. Follow all the instructions as we lead up to get ready to get ready. And on Monday morning, we'll launch. You're going to see the Taskmaster come out in me in the next 40 days. If you want in on that course, again, you can still get in. If you can't figure out how, email me, jackatthesurvivalpodcast.com. TSP and C in the subject line. I'll send you a link and I'll help you. Take care, guys. Have a great day.
Said you should have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month, and you